This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
You can stick it to the man and big tech. Join our FTL social mastodon at social.freetalklive.com.
Of course, you can bring up absolutely anything that you want to discuss. We just talked to Dana Larson, one of the preeminent drug freedom activists up there in Canada. He's based out of Vancouver. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of reasons why I would want to go to Canada in general. It's just, you know, I've been there before. You've been there once. You've kind of seen what you need to see. But I've never been to Vancouver. And, you know, I would love to go and actually see a shop where you can walk in, buy some coca leaf tea or like a coca leaf soda, which I presume gives you a little pep to your day, and possibly walk out with some mushrooms, some LSD or some DMT or peyote. Just pay cash and then, oh, you know what? I meant to ask him if he takes crypto.
Oh, that would have been a great question.
I should have asked that. I should have asked it after we talked about Dash last hour, but I didn't. Maybe we'll have him back to give us an update at some point on what's going on there. But it just sounds like a really cool thing. And the fact that they've been able to operate there for years without any kind of meaningful molestation by the people calling themselves the government is an amazing success story. And it's something that I hope is inspirational to others out there. Obviously, as he pointed out, he's taking significant risk by doing this, and kudos to him for being able to, you know, to do that. It takes a real special kind of character to be willing to take that kind of risk. And but I really appreciate the fact that it's not just him. Like he said, there's 10 stores in just Vancouver alone that are selling mushrooms. And so, you know, based on what he was telling us, this sort of civil disobedience, this business civil disobedience, right? Because, like, normally when we think of civil disobedience, it's some guy going out and smoking pot in Central Square, or it's some sort of individual, or if you're lucky, a group of people that just go to some public place and they break some prohibition. That's mm-hmm. kind of like the, when I think of civil disobedience, that's what comes to mind.
Definitely.
But this is a level of civil disobedience that you got to have some money, right? Like, you got to have some money. You got to have some time. Like, he's obviously been a successful businessman. He was one of the co-publishers of Cannabis Culture magazine, which for years was, like, the top counterculture magazine in Canada, one of the top two counterculture magazines in all of North America. There was High Times, and then there was Cannabis Culture. I mean, it was an incredible institution.
Yeah, I'm not a cannabis user, but I've heard, certainly heard of
You've
both
heard
of those.
Them. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, so
it's that prominent in the even amongst non-users.
Yes, exactly. They made a real name for themselves, for sure. And as I was saying, they reported on what we were doing here in Keene back in 2009 with the 420s here. So really appreciate the work that they've done. So obviously he was very successful at what he was doing and has the money to where he can go and get into a commercial lease.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's what, 5-year minimum, mostly commercial
leases? That's pretty standard. 5-year minimum. And there's usually, you know, there's usually a lot of cost to it, too. Just
yeah.
Because there's, I mean,
you got to renovate the building.
When
or
you're
whatever.
Looking at space to rent, it's whatever the price is, there's usually double that.
Sure, because they have the fees that come in, what do they call it? Triple net, I think is the code.
I can't remember exactly what they are, but like there's like grounds fees.
Right.
And.
Yeah,
or something akin to...
It includes clearing the snow,
right,
and putting
salt
down, and clearing the parking lot during the wintertime.
And then, you know, you got to get internet access and utilities
power bills.
And power bills.
It's a big deal.
Right.
It's a big deal to open any business, let alone all the stupid permits or whatever nonsense. And he's in court over that, as he was telling us. But the amount of money that you have to put to sink into something like this, and then, you know, we haven't even talked about the inventory. Right? I mean, it's one thing to source legal products from legal places, it's a whole other challenge to source a reliable supply. Because that's one of the problems in the black market is it isn't the most reliable place because, you know, people get arrested sometimes and the supplies dry up or the Border Patrol snags the product as it's coming across the border or whatever.
Yeah,
right?
It's interesting. Usually what you do in situations like this is you plan for a certain amount of loss to the product. And, you know, it's funny because I sort of understand this from you know, being in the electronics business, a certain percentage of the product is always going to be defective.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the same thing is sort of true in, you know, agriculture, just in general. You're going to have a product that's going to go bad on you or, you know, whatnot. And in this case, it's seized. Some of it's going to get seized.
Yeah.
So you have to work that into your business model.
I presume he has, over the years, cultivated a group of trusted sources that are fairly close to him, right? That, you know, you don't have to go across the border to get mushrooms. You can just, you know, a grower in Vancouver or something, right? So I'm sure there's some stuff that's coming local. The marijuana is probably coming local, the mushrooms. There's probably a chemist in Vancouver or in, you know, Canada that's doing the LSD and things like that. So I imagine he's going as close to home as he possibly can. But these are all big challenges, and this is big level civil disobedience. It takes a lot. You put a lot on the line. Not only could you lose the entire inventory to a raid and whatever cash you might have on hand, because it ain't coming back.
No.
Right? You could also lose your freedom.
Yep.
And you know, for him to just get on here and admit money laundering, right? Like on the show.
And you know what's interesting is, and I don't know how it is in Canada specifically, but you know, you can basically end up with a situation where even if you win the case, you may still lose your inventory.
Good luck getting that back.
It's illegal, and when we start talking about like possession laws, if they were to give it back to you, well, they would be able to charge you again because the possession is illegal. So even though you won your case,
it's gone.
It's gone.
This is a level of civil disobedience that you just don't see very often, but I thought it's such an interesting story about what has happened there in Canada, where they led the way to legalization by just doing it, not waiting for some politicians to, oh, please, can we sell cannabis? No, they just opened a storefront and they started selling cannabis, and then he taught other people how to do the same thing, and then other people opened storefronts and started selling cannabis while the politicians were still trying to figure out how to legalize it.
The open defiance thing, you know, doing it blatantly and openly is such a good idea, I think, in many cases, just because it's like, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, the worst thing that happens is maybe you get arrested.
Well, you could go to prison. I mean, that's the worst thing. You could go to prison for years for drug distribution.
I mean, sure. But it also, if there's other people willing to step up to the plate, and that's sometimes the hard part, is getting other people, being around other people that will step up to the plate. But there are people like that in New Hampshire, in a lot of cases, I think. So.
Are there? I mean, I hope that there are. I would love to see something like this emulated here.
You weren't the only person arrested, like, in the Crypto 6 case. It's not the same thing exactly, but...
Well, yeah, in Crypto 6, we weren't doing civil disobedience. In Crypto 6, we weren't breaking... I understand people
That's
pled
true.
Guilty.
Exactly the same thing.
I understand there were some people who pled guilty, but that wasn't because they actually committed crimes. That wasn't because they were doing quote-unquote crimes or doing civil disobedience. They pled guilty because they were afraid to go to trial, understandably.
Sure.
It doesn't mean they were actually doing those things illegally or that those things are illegal that they were doing, because they're not.
I'd agree with you. I think, though, it wasn't whether or not they were illegal or not legal. It was that people did them knowing that they would have examined and potentially arrested.
Yeah, well, I think we would say we knew that we were being watched. We knew that there was...
There's a risk to it.
We knew there was risk involved, for sure, and at least in my case, I can say I was willing to go up against whatever came. I didn't realize it was going to be as big as it was as far as all the charges that they brought. I figured at the most I would be facing an unlicensed transmitter or money transmitter charge, and, you know, a couple others, and ended up being 25 charges. They dropped 17 of them before trial, thank goodness.
Yeah.
But that wasn't civil disobedience, because it is still my belief, even though a jury has convicted me of all 8 counts, it is still my belief that the things I was doing is not illegal. There's no law on the books about cryptocurrency sales. It's just not there.
Yeah, it is interesting to frame it the way you are. It's probably correct. It's just so weird because it's at the same time, it's like you're still fighting it. You know, it's like you didn't just take a plea deal.
Of course not. I didn't do anything illegal. Like, I didn't do anything wrong.
It's weird because it's like activism, but you didn't do civil disobedience. It's such a...
Well, it's always activism when you don't go along with the state. So
right.
what you're talking about would be a non-cooperation, right? When the state puts the screws to you and you don't go along with what they want you to do, which is take the plea deal, then you're still exercising your rights in the form of you're not just doing what they want. And so, to me, it's important to make a stand for what you believe in, and that's why I really love what Dana Larson is doing there in Vancouver, and I hope it catches on, and maybe it is, because I've got a story here from MSN, and originally the Los Angeles Times, that in Los Angeles, there's now what was just a cannabis dispensary that is now selling some magic mushrooms. It's in a rundown shopping center in coastal L.A. County, offering the standard fare, pre-rolled joints, vape pens, a wide range of edibles, and a selection of smoking accessories. But there's one extra class of items that is distinguishing the storefront on the county's suburban fringe. It's a glass case displaying magic mushrooms and a variety of items containing psilocybin, which is the compound that provides said magic to those who consume it, a compound that is still illegal statewide. As the state legislature considers a bill to decriminalize several psychedelics, including psilocybin, some L.A. state or area businesses are openly selling the potent hallucinogen. Although cannabis is legal statewide, no Southern California municipality or county has followed the lead of Oakland and Santa Cruz by decriminalizing magic mushrooms. And just to be clear, I'm pretty sure that in Oakland and Santa Cruz, the decriminalization of magic mushrooms only has to do with the possession of them. They did not decriminalize the sales of those things. But regardless, according to the story here, there's a thriving market for the fungi and other psychedelics, and L.A. entrepreneurs have long taken advantage of the relative scarcity and high demand by selling them illegally in gleaming storefronts and in parking lots. L.A. County Sheriff's Department served about 50 search warrants at dispensaries selling magic mushrooms in the last 6 months alone. So they are not being ignored. They are being targeted. Meanwhile, there is growing support for legalizing or decriminalizing psilocybin and other hallucinogens among psychologists, researchers, veterans advocates, and others who've witnessed mental health turnarounds after psychedelic treatment. And we've seen a lot of the studies here on Free Talk Live looking at these psychedelic substances and seeing they've just had tremendous results for people, whether it be PTSD, depression, for instance, anxiety, even other drug addictions. Mushrooms, for instance, have helped people defeat things like alcoholism or cigarette addiction, nicotine addiction. So they're very, very powerful substances that can almost kind of help rewire the brain and address some significant problems that one has in life. But that's not going to stop the Sheriff's Department from coming in and raiding these places, which apparently they've been doing. And so they're pushing for changes. There is a Senate Bill 58 in California that would eliminate criminal penalties for possessing, growing, and sharing small amounts of several psychedelic substances. But still, that wouldn't legalize sales of those substances. You could give them away, but it's kind of hard to make that sustainable. I mean, you have to pay somebody to grow these things, right? Like, usually people aren't willing to just do this as a charity. And if there were free mushroom giveaways, then there'd be plenty of people lining up around the block to get them, and they would be sold out within minutes. So you have to have a price on these things. So even the bill that's currently being proposed is not going to legalize the sale of mushrooms. So then they talk a little bit about the bill itself and, you know, what's it going to do. It's decriminalizing possession or use of certain psychedelics, and it's being argued about in California's legislature. At another coastal L.A. County cannabis dispensary a few miles from the first one, customers hand their driver's licenses over to a receptionist who asks them to turn their hats around and put their cell phones away before they take a seat in a small waiting room. When it's their turn to shop, they're buzzed past a locked door into another high-ceilinged room to survey the psychoactive wares. Most are there for the wide array of cannabis products and accessories, but in one corner, near the jars of green marijuana buds, a larger glass jar is filled to the brim with stubby mushrooms, which have brown caps and psilocybin's characteristic bluish tint. Clear plastic bottles of liquid, described by their labels as mushroom-infused liquids, glow in the shelf's neon strip lighting. Gummies containing a psychedelic mushroom blend come in colorful toadstool-shaped pouches, including flavors like Passion Tango Lemonade. Chocolate bars from two manufacturers, one based in Oakland, contain a pre-measured dose of mushrooms in each square. So there's a lot of different dosing options for these products, which is great. Gives people choices. Over multiple visits to the two suburban dispensaries, the Times did not witness the sale of any mushrooms or psilocybin-based products. One customer said in the parking lot after buying some cannabis edibles that he didn't even know that they sold shrooms. He said, "That's crazy. I might have to come back sometime." Still, an employee said that they sell quickly after we get them in. People really love them. Yet local dispensary owners are frequently busted for selling mushrooms and other illicit substances. In April of last year, the L.A. County Sheriff's Department tweeted that during the previous half year, it had made 277 arrests and seized approximately 4,000 pounds of marijuana, 3,300 pounds of marijuana edibles, 29 pounds of mushrooms, and 1,000 pounds of fentanyl from quote-unquote illegal marijuana dispensaries in the county's unincorporated areas. It's unclear whether the two dispensaries sell illegal drugs other than psilocybin mushrooms and their byproducts. None were on clear display at either location. The lieutenant at the Sheriff's Department's Narcotics Bureau said that psychedelic mushrooms are commonly sold at dispensaries in their unincorporated areas where even cannabis-only outlets are illegal. So this is happening. And it's happening on apparently a fairly frequent level in Los Angeles. And this is essentially they're following the Dana Larson model. They're taking serious risk by putting these products on display and making them available to, it sounds like, any adult that wants to purchase them. The officer in this case said they won't openly typically sell them. They usually have a small amount, 2 to 10 pounds of mushrooms. He says, and you'd have to ask for it because they don't have it on display. They might be somewhere out of view, like in the back. Describing illegal dispensaries as, quote, a really big problem, unquote. Not sure why that is. Is it just because they don't have licensing money coming in? Is that why it's a problem? Moss said that despite the Sheriff's Department's efforts, the illicit industry persists because it's so lucrative. He said, quote, we investigate and serve search warrants at these illegal dispensaries in attempts to shut them down. The analogy is kind of like whack-a-mole. You shut them down and they reopen in another location. Which is interesting because, I mean, presumably we're talking about felony charges here. Right? Like, you're not just catching a misdemeanor charge in any state in the United States for selling mushrooms. It's just not happening. Hmm. So I don't understand how you can just pop right up the next day.
It's, you know, here's my speculation is what they probably mean by that is that other people will be opening up because there's just so many people willing and to stand up.
They see the market is demanding this.
And they see other people doing it, and so they get in on it, too.
That would make sense, because it doesn't make any sense to get arrested for felony drug distribution and then walk out of jail after you get bail conditions. And open up another shop. Let's go to Alu Axelman on the line here from the Liberty Block at libertyblock.com. Hello, Alu.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's on your mind tonight?
I have a lot of things on my mind. I want to comment on the last few episodes. I'm still, like, 2 days behind on the podcast. But the most recent thing I heard you guys talk about was Jay brought up Daniel Penny and Jordan Neely. I finally, because Dan Bongino, who I listen to, who's usually pretty good, and usually if he's going to say something, he's generally right. He's not always pro-liberty. It doesn't realize he's such a solution. But he said he's an expert in chokeholds and BJJ. He trained for a while in jiu-jitsu. And he said it's not a chokehold. It's a carotid restraint. I and others who have decades of experience in Brazilian jiu-jitsu and other grappling and wrestling things never heard that term ever. So it's a rear naked choke, and that's what it's called, at least in this universe, at least in this Milky Way. So it's a rear naked choke, and it looks like Daniel Penny, this ex-Marine who subdued this guy, who, again, the guy was probably threatening people and probably mentally ill, but also I think Penny was probably overzealous as far as, like, choking him that quickly. So I kind of give a nuanced video that pisses off both sides, as usual. So I finally, anyway, Bongino motivated me to make a video, so I think yesterday I did a video podcast with all of my nuanced analysis and opinions, like speaking medically about what occluding a vein and artery and trachea actually would look like, mm-hmm. and you know how he may avoid stuff. So that's on Odyssey, Rumble, and Facebook, and the podcast and everything. So that was my first thing I wanted to say about, like, I finally made a video about that.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, being on the outside of that situation to really get a good feel for what was going on. For listeners that aren't familiar, maybe you haven't heard, there's a Marine that choked out a what looked like a schizophrenic crazy man on a New York City subway within the last, I guess, couple weeks. And, you know, one side says that the crazy man was just acting crazy and that he wasn't threatening. He didn't overtly threaten anyone. He just dropped his jacket to the floor and was saying that he didn't care if he died or something like that. He was hungry, etc. The other side is saying, no, he was a threat. He was a danger. Some of the people around him felt threatened. Now, I don't know if they felt threatened because he actually issued any threats,
yeah.
or if it was just because he was acting crazy. None of that's been really made clear, and unfortunately, the only video of the event, at least so far that I've seen, picks up in the middle of the man being put into this chokehold. So he's already in the chokehold when the video starts, so you don't get to see whatever it was that came before. So there's different kind of opinions coming from different people that were there. It's hard to really tell.
I mean, people feel threatened all the time over other people's speech, right? Like,
yeah.
like not even like in person, but like on the internet. So I wouldn't be surprised if somebody said, "Oh, I felt threatened from this lunatic," and not
even
actually
though he didn't
been
say anything.
Any kind of threat to them.
Yeah, and so
I can't imagine like manslaughter charges at least not being appropriate. Dan Bongino seemed to say it was totally defense of others. This guy is a saint, and Neely was a violent criminal, and there shouldn't be any charges at all. And it's a travesty, pretty much. This seems like textbook manslaughter, mm-hmm. where he didn't really intend to kill him, but he did kill him due to some level of recklessness or negligence, which does seem to be the case. Again, we'll wait for the whole thing to play out, and the jury will decide. But to say that charges of manslaughter is not appropriate, I can't imagine. It doesn't really make any sense to me.
And that is what they have charged him with in this case, right?
Yeah, in New York State, it's weird. Apparently, it's manslaughter second degree manslaughter. I think generally it's like first, second, third degree is manslaughter, which is the involuntary in most states, I believe. But it's second degree manslaughter, which I guess is the least serious of all them, but it still could be like 5-10 years in prison, I think.
I know you said you had something else you wanted to comment on. You want to stick around?
Yeah, sure.
All right, we're here with Alu Axelman. He's the president of the Foundation for New Hampshire Independence, great liberty activist up here. We've also been talking about psychedelics and just opening up dispensaries for magic mushrooms. They're happening in Vancouver in a big way there. Apparently also Los Angeles County has some businesses that are openly selling mushrooms in. Some of them are getting raided. There's more coming up. It's Free Talk Live.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, silverlungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at silverlungs.com. That's silverlungs.com.
USA News Update. The alleged Pentagon leaker will remain in custody as he awaits trial. Federal judge in Massachusetts ordered National Air Guardsman Jack Fischer to be held in custody without bail. Prosecutors argued Fischer is a flight risk, while defense attorneys had asked that their client be released and allowed to stay at his father's home. Negotiations over raising the debt ceiling are on hold.
The U.S. Senate is going ahead with its scheduled recess next week. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says that he'll call senators back within 24 hours' notice If they need to take a vote on a debt ceiling deal, if one comes to the chamber, Congress must pass a debt ceiling increase by the first week of June or risk a national default.
NFL legend, civil rights activist, and actor Jim Brown has died. The Hall of Famer retired after 9 years playing with the Cleveland Browns in the 50s and 60s. Dave Collins, USA News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. And there's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discovery on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Appreciate what we do? Help us advertise, market, and promote for just $5 a month at amp.freetalklive.com.
It's Free Talk Live. You can join us here. The phones are open. The number is 603-283-6160. That's 603-283-6160. We are talking about some of the most ballsy, risky civil disobedience out there, and that is the opening of an actual storefront to sell things that the government says is illegal. And we're talking about psilocybin mushrooms. They're being sold at cannabis dispensaries, whether they are illegal or legal cannabis dispensaries, out in Los Angeles. Also in Vancouver, they're being sold with relatively no issues in Vancouver. Los Angeles, however, police are conducting raids. They are arresting people there. But in Vancouver, it's been going pretty smoothly so far. If you want to comment, you're welcome to join the show. The number is 603-283-6160. However, things did not go smoothly for a man who set up shop in a mobile trailer in downtown Vancouver and started to sell crack cocaine, methamphetamine, and heroin. The police didn't let him go for much more than 24 hours, I think. We can talk more about that. But Alu Axelman is on the line here with us from LibertyBlock.com. And you wanted to comment on some of the stuff we've been talking about over the last few days. So what else, man? Go ahead.
Yes, sir. Well, before I even get to that, those who are selling drugs that are not legal, according to the D.C. politicians, should move to New Hampshire, especially if they love liberty in all other areas as well as drugs. And we have the highest concentration of pro-liberty people in the universe, regardless of what King Mark says. So I think they should move here. And we have so many people here helping that if cops did come, we would have 100 people filming them for every one cop there, or we'd have jury nullification to get them off, or we would just recede very soon anyway, and then federal drug laws wouldn't apply here anyway.
Well, I think that if it were to be done here in New Hampshire, I think you'd want to start at the same level that they did in Vancouver 15 or 20 years ago, which is to say, just opening a cannabis dispensary. Take your risk as low as you can take it. I don't know if society is ready for open mushroom sales, but you might be able to find a friendly jury on cannabis sales. I think that's where, if it were me, that's where I would cut it off.
Yeah, that's where I would start, too, with cannabis. So anyway, speaking of victimless crimes, I wrote a whole book, Presumed Guilty, that all about due process violations, and victimless crimes is a full chapter, and Bobby's reading it right now for the audiobook. I got a book signing event scheduled for June 3rd at a store in Manchester, a nice big bookstore called The Bookery. It's a really nice bookstore, and they're going to have me on this Saturday the 3rd from 4 to 6. So it's in like 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
To do a book signing, speaking about Presumed Guilty, signing books, hanging out, chatting with people. And I'll have my books and probably my new book preview, if it's not published yet, my book, The Pocket Guide to Killing Gun Control. I finally took on gun control in a nice long book, but simple. And it goes from every argument from constitutional to principled to practical, actual statistics, everything in the world about gun controls, and then a whole lot of other info at the end just about guns for those who are interested.
So this bookstore, do they actually sell your books?
I think the tentative plan, I spoke to the manager a few months ago when we set this up, I think the plan is that after Saturday they will have my books in the store.
Oh, great. That's a cool way to kick it off. So
yeah, it's going to be super fun. So I'm encouraging all porcupines in the Manchester area to come out and show them that a pro-liberty book author book signing can attract people, and then they'll want to do it again with me or other pro-liberty authors, because we have a few dozen.
Now, of course, you're also going to be at the Porcupine Freedom Festival. I suspect you're going to have a table there, so I'm sure there's some people that they're just not up in the area at the moment, but if they want to meet you and pick up a copy of your book in person, you'll be able to do that at Porkfest, right?
Yes, exactly. I'm going to be at RV1 again. It's ALU, A-L-U is the name of the site this year, and so it's like the first thing when you come in from the parking lot from that bar that raises to let the car in. If you turn to your left, you'll see me there. I'll be there all week. Me and a few other little porcupines I'll probably hire to help sell books when I'm busy speaking. And yeah, I'll have all my books there for sale, like a few dozen or 100 of each, and they'll be for sale for gold, back, silver, crypto, fiat, and barter all week long. And I'm giving a few talks about my books and stuff like that. I'm hoping The Pocket Guide to Killing Gun Control will be totally published and available, and I'll have 100 copies there by then, in a month from now.
Wow.
So that should be super exciting, too.
Excellent, Lalu. I appreciate it, man, and look forward to seeing you when we see you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call tonight. That's Lalu Axelman from LibertyBlock.com. Does some great work. Lots of writing. Prolific writer.
Yeah, he's got a lot of books out.
Yeah, he doesn't just write books. He also writes a ton of articles on his website, LibertyBlock.com, and somehow has time to have a family and work somewhere. And he works out, too.
Yeah, he's got a busy...
I don't know if he sleeps. He may not actually sleep.
He doesn't sound
I don't see how he could possibly get...
It doesn't seem like a sleeper kind of guy.
Just since we've been talking about it, here's the story. I mentioned it earlier as we were interviewing Dana Larson in the first hour. This story came out earlier this month. It was a 51-year-old man named Jerry Martin who apparently got himself a mobile trailer attached to some kind of truck or whatever and pulled it up in the downtown east side area of Vancouver, setting up shop and making sales of cocaine, crack, methamphetamine, and heroin. And the Vancouver police have, arrested him, and I presume confiscated everything. Wednesday that week, the CBC News spoke with Jerry Martin about the launch of his mobile drug store. He told On the Coast that he planned to sell illicit drugs in small quantities up to a maximum of 2.5 grams. Remember, we learned from Dana, I did not know this, but in Vancouver, and I think he said it was the whole of British Columbia, they had decriminalized possession of up to 2.5 grams of things like heroin and methamphetamine or whatever. But for whatever reason, they didn't decriminalize possession of some of the psychedelics, which is weird why they would do the hard stuff, but not as hard stuff. Anyway, So I guess that's what motivated him. He was like, you know, okay, well, now that it's decriminalized, he wanted to go sell it. Which, of course, they didn't decriminalize the sale of those things.
Of course not.
They decriminalized the possession of them. But, you know, kudos to him for being willing to take the risk. And it wasn't just the risk of the police putting him in handcuffs. He also was wearing body armor in his mobile store to, you know, presumably because he thought there was a chance somebody was going to rob him who weren't the cops.
Oh, wow.
Right?
I was assuming that the body armor was to protect himself from being shot by the cops. Because they, you know, those guys like to shoot people.
Well, I mean, that's a realistic possibility as well. But, I mean, if you've got some crackheads that know that there's a big crack supply at the corner of whatever it was and wherever, apparently Main and Cordova streets, one of them might just get it in their head that they can just go ahead and take the crack instead of pay for it. Earlier this year, a three-year project pilot approved by Health Canada did decriminalize possession of up to 2.5 grams of opioids, cocaine, methamphetamine, and MDMA for British Columbians age 18 or older. The police spokes bureaucrat stated that the VPD supports harm reduction services and decriminalization. Quote, however, we remain committed in our position that drug trafficking will continue to be the subject of enforcement, unquote. Which, you know, it just doesn't make sense. If people understand that drugs should be decriminalized, that there shouldn't be criminal penalties for people who have a health problem, right, Luke, who are addicted to something. This is a personal problem. This is a problem that affects the individual. Now, you can argue, yeah, but it affects other people because then they're going to steal to get the money to buy the stuff that they need, or, you know, they may do something crazy while they're really high. But the fact is, prohibition drives prices up. So that's what drives people to have to steal in order to purchase the drugs.
You know, it just seems so insane, though, to argue that you should be arresting people, you know, crack addicts, because of the crack, rather than actually arresting them because they stole stuff, right? Like
sure.
I get this, arresting them because they stole stuff, but it doesn't necessarily mean every crack addict is going to be stealing stuff.
Well, and now they are decriminalizing possession, so now they won't be arresting, presumably. I don't know if that they can still confiscate, because I know that in Portugal, where they've had drug decriminalization for 20 years or something like that, I believe they can still confiscate the drugs, and then they, like, force you to go to a treatment program or something like that. So there's still some kind of coercion going on there, but you won't get a criminal charge. You won't have to go to jail. So it's still a big step in the right direction. So, presumably in Canada, or at least in British Columbia, they are not arresting people for possession of these very, very hard drugs. So they've come to that realization of, this isn't helping. Okay, it's not helping a person who's down and out, they're a crack addict, they got a problem, or whatever. It's not going to make them better.
Certainly not the way they were doing it before.
To put them in jail.
Yeah, they were arresting people before for, you know, weed, and then they'd end up throwing them in a cage, and then while in prison, they get addicted to something harder because that they never even encountered before.
I'm being told in our chat room here by Baraka66, who I believe is a Canadian, if I recall correctly, he says the guy in the story we're talking about wanted to get arrested to do a Charter of Right challenge in court. Now, I'm not sure what that means. It may have to do with what Dana Larson was telling us about earlier, where there's this Canadian Charter of Rights that came into place.
Constitutional sort of thing.
Yeah, it came into place, he said, in the 1980s, so they're still trying to, like, figure out what it means. What is the, you know, how do the courts interpret that? So this may have been part of a larger plan. It's a very, very interesting case. He had a sign up, like a nice printed sign, kind of like you get the signs that you put up over at Porkfest, that corrugated look.
Oh, yeah.
With all his prices. So cocaine, crack cocaine, nice. Heroin, all the prices for the amounts that he was selling. Martin had told CBC News he was prepared to be arrested. Oh, it's right here in the story. Once the store opened, in fact, he said one of his goals is to launch a constitutional challenge arguing for a legal, safe supply of drugs. He said at the time, quote, they've called for a clean, safe supply, the police and the government, so I'm hoping they just let me do what they need to do. He says they should have done this themselves. And Dana did touch on this earlier, like, well, you know, maybe the government should do this. Like, no, you really don't want the government handling drug sales. I mean, they suck. They suck at doing everything that they try to do.
Yeah, I mean, this is why it causes prices to go up. It causes all sorts of other problems when you have government, you know, getting involved. It's not worth it.
In Canada, if I recall, I don't know if it's still true, it probably is, but when I was there visiting 15 years ago, roughly, I was in Toronto, and Canada, they have state liquor stores, not just liquor stores, I'm pretty sure beer and wine stores.
Okay.
So you can't go into, or at least you couldn't, maybe if it's changed now, Canadians, please let me know. But at the time, you couldn't just go to like 7-Eleven or a convenience store of some sort and buy beer. You couldn't just buy a bottle of wine. You had to go to the state store. So my girlfriend and I at the time, we wanted to go and get something to drink while we were there, and we went to the state outlet or whatever they call it there. And it was closed. And it wasn't even that late at night. It was like 8 p.m. or something like that. Like, not a late time frame. And we were in a major city. We were in Toronto. So you would figure, I don't know, keep the place open till 10 or something like that. But no, it's a government store. So
yeah.
They have no competition. They'll set whatever hours they want to. Let's see what other things here. In an email, the City of Vancouver's chief license inspector said the municipality will not issue business licenses for the sale of illicit drugs, such as heroin, cocaine, and methamphetamine. She said further, quote, should the city be made aware of a retailer selling any of these substances or products containing them, they will be subject to enforcement for operating without a valid development permit and or business license, which may include orders, fines, and or prosecution. So I'm very interested to hear what happens with this guy. His name, again, is Jerry Martin. He says he's going to do a constitutional challenge on this. And Baraka66 says, in Quebec province, it is available. That is to say, alcohol is available in the 7-Eleven. Ontario, it's state stores and grocery only. Okay, so that explains it, because we're in the Ontario province, which is where Toronto's is located. So I guess it's different depending on which province you're in. Let's go to the phones here. We got Major Payne on the line in Michigan. Major, you're on Free Talk Live.
Hey, good evening, guys.
Hey.
Yeah, you were talking about California and the cops saying, well, we shut one down and they just pop right up. It's like playing whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that made me chuckle because mushrooms pop up overnight, too.
They do, don't they?
And I would have called in earlier with your guest, but I didn't want to waste it on just one call. Mm-hmm. I wonder if you ever tested any STP.
What's that?
It's a very hardcore hallucinogenic.
I'm not familiar with it. STP?
Yeah. It's a three-day trip, and you go in peaks and valleys. You keep getting higher and lower and higher and lower and higher and lower.
Have you tried it?
No, I have not, but I talked to a couple cats back in the day. This was in the 70s when, you know, you could still get real LSD, brown and clear, mm-hmm. liquid, whatever you wanted.
You can still get real LSD today, Major.
Yeah, I'm sure you can, but they made the chemicals harder to come by, and, you know, as they do. But sure. I wanted to talk about the future of AM radio. You wouldn't believe it. The politicians are actually getting along on something.
Oh, yeah. I heard about this. Go ahead and fill our listeners in. It was definitely something I thought about talking about.
Well, Tesla is going to ban AM radios in their cars. They're just not going to put them in.
Mm-hmm.
And Ford's talking about following suit next year.
Really?
But, yeah, it's an electric car thing. There's interference, essentially.
Some kind of a capacitor in the radio to keep it from, and they had to do the same thing with resistor spark plugs back in the day.
Yep. So they there's RF from.
So what's happening exactly? Where's the? So there's it would interfere with AM radio.
There's interference with the AM side of radio from some of the parts of these electric cars, essentially. And so they don't want to put it in. You know, like, why?
Interesting. So
they could filter it somehow.
They would do FM but not AM.
Yeah. Apparently they are doing FM not AM. Yep.
Okay.
What they don't realize is the AM stations have a high power. After sundown, if you got a high power station, you can crank the power up. I got a high resolution AM radio. I can pick up St. Louis, Kentucky, mm-hmm. Chicago. I can't remember the farthest place I've ever picked up with clarity, but the ones I'm talking about come in just like it's from, you know, the next county.
Right.
If you ever have a national emergency and you got to spread the word, Well, by God, you better have something that will get more than one state away. And the other thing is that AM radio probably is about half of your stations. It's most of the conservative radio, most of the Christian radio, most of the radio that's not NBC, ABC, CBS, and CNN.
Sure. Yeah, no, I get what you're saying. I mean, not every AM station is a powerhouse, though. There's some, a lot of them are less than 1,000 watts or about 1,000 watts. And I remember when I was on Free Talk Live, the second station we were on was an AM, just a tiny little AM station in Sarasota, Florida, 500 watts at nighttime. So at nighttime, they don't. Most AM stations don't increase wattage at night. They lower. So this station would drop its wattage as soon as the sun went down. And if you were driving on any road in the city and you went under power lines, you could hear the interference from the power lines on this particular radio station. So I suspect that's part of the problem with the electric cars is there's, you know, whatever the equipment is that's causing the interference is in there, and they would have to put some kind of excessive level of filtering to deal with that. So it probably would be an increased cost of building the car in order to protect, quote-unquote, AM radio from being able to be received without interference. But what you're calling to tell us about here, Major, is that Congress is possibly going to act about this.
But Congress they're actually get together on something for a change. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, I'm not in
favor. To get rid of it or to protect it?
To protect AM radio and force car manufacturers.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, yeah, force car manufacturers to include it. Basically.
Interesting.
That's what you're calling
right? They charge $40,000 for a car. You tell me they can't put a $30 capacitor in the damn thing.
I mean, I suspect it's even cheaper than that. It probably isn't a huge cost to do whatever it is, you know, put whatever equipment they need to make sure that the AM signals are not interfered with. But it's their business, and they shouldn't be forced to put something into their car. Of course, they've been forced to put things into their cars for years with, you know, the various different California mandates and the federal mandates.
Yeah,
with,
you know, this argument, though, I'm not a fan of.
I would have to argue it is for the public good.
It's not that the government does like a perfect example. I was at a hearing in New Hampshire, and I testified against some stupid bill that was like a one sheet piece of paper that would have they'd make you fill something out. And the reason was stupid, but that's not the point. The point was it wasn't that one sheet of paper. It's all of the sheets of paper because they add up, and that's where the cost is. If you look at like the cost of manufacturing vehicles in certain countries where you don't have all these regulations, like I think India, for example, you know, you can get cars really cheap. You can't get cars cheap here in the United States because of all the regulation.
Right.
And it's not one regulation. It's all the regulations added up.
Yeah, for sure. So, Major, what's your argument here to force car manufacturers to put AM radio in?
Well, I just think it's for the public good.
Why?
We ought to be able to be informed. And if, you know, whether it be a tsunami or a solar flare or whatever takes out all your local grid.
Mm-hmm.
And, I got solar panels. You know, a lot of people got the old crank-up radios and whatnot.
Yeah, I've got one.
People need to be able to be informed.
Yeah, so why would you mandate it? You can still get that if you want that, right? If you want to protect yourself, you can get yourself a crank radio. I have one.
Sure. Yeah, or you can get probably have an aftermarket radio put into your car, right? Like if you don't like the whatever it is that they give you in the vehicle that you purchased, then you can add something to it. I would think you can still do that, right? I mean, I imagine it'll mess up your dashboard, but.
I had a 68 Galaxy, and it only came with an AM radio. And back then, they sold a little gizmo they called an FM converter.
Sure.
It was only a couple wires, and you hooked it in. And I tell you what, that old Ford, that radio sounded great.
Well, what good is it to put in a device into cars that, you know, young people don't even know what it is?
Well, good question. Maybe young people ought to be a little more educated by old people.
Major, thanks for the call tonight. I appreciate it.
You know what's funny about this is, like, I want a radio in my car, but
sure.
I wouldn't
expect... Do you
expect,
use it, though?
No, but I wouldn't expect... I wouldn't want the government to mandate it, right?
That's
like,
right, yeah.
I want a radio in the car, but I'm gonna achieve that through the free market by buying a vehicle that has a radio, or you know, retrofitting it, you know, by, you know, buying a radio and having it installed in my vehicle.
Right. And as you said, you have a crank radio that's portable that you can take anywhere you want, right? You can take it into any room of your house. You can go outside. You can take it into your car.
Yeah.
If you wanted to do that, you don't need to have it on the actual car. So here's the story. It's from Talkers Magazine. It came into my email box yesterday morning, and I thought, the reason I didn't bring it up as show prep is because it's just a bill. It may not go anywhere, right? So I tend to not really like talking about just bills as much as bills that are, like, on the verge of being passed and or have been passed, right? So this could go absolutely nowhere. But it is being sponsored by a bipartisan group of Democrats and Republicans, and it's both senators and representatives that are doing this. It would, quote, direct federal regulators to require automakers to maintain AM broadcast radio in new vehicles at no additional charge. Specifically, the bill would do three things. One, direct the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to issue a rule that requires automakers to maintain AM broadcast radio in their vehicles without a separate or additional payment fee or surcharge. Two, require any automaker that sells vehicles without access to AM broadcast radio before the effective date of this regulation to clearly disclose to consumers the vehicle lacks access to AM broadcast radio. And three, direct the Government Accountability Office to study whether alternative communication systems could fully replicate the reach and effectiveness of AM broadcast radio for alerting the public to emergencies. And then they talked to the National Association of Broadcasters, which is, of course, a lobbyist group for the radio industry. And they filleted the senators and the representatives for their leadership in advocating for AM radio listeners. This legislation ensures that the tens of millions of Americans who depend on AM radio for news, entertainment, and critical safety information each month can continue to have access to this reliable communications medium. As to the backbone of the emergency alert system, AM radio is instrumental in promptly disseminating vital information across all mediums during crises, ensuring the communities remain safe and well-informed. So, yeah, they're basically saying that we need AM radio to be mandated, even though you can't mandate that someone use it. Because if it's in the car, they can't force you to actually have it on. So, like, this just seems so pointless to me. I get that people out there that are older really love AM radio, but those people are probably no younger than 55 at this point. If you want to join the show here, the number is 603-283-6160. And look, I understand our show's on a bunch of AM stations. The majority of them are AM stations. So we'll continue the discussion. Hour number three is on the way. You can join us here. This is Free Talk Live.
No matter where you live, what you make, or who you voted for, there are some things that will impact all of us soon. Whether you're concerned about the alarming increase in man-made disasters, financial institutions collapsing, or worsening food shortages, Americans are preparing in numbers not seen since World War II. What's changed is how we prepare. And the folks at My Patriot Supply have made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind, knowing you're ready for what's next. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on over a dozen emergency food kits. These include tasty breakfasts, lunches, dinners, drinks, fruits, veggies, meats, and snacks, averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one kit per person. As we all know, calories equals energy equals survival. My Patriot Supply food kits are in stock and shipped discreetly. We've seen too many Americans let down by institutions we used to trust. It's time to rely on ourselves. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
You've been hearing Dr. Wallach talking about 90 essential nutrients, keeping the body healthy. GCNteam.com now has Beyond Tangy Tangerine Tablets. 60 plant-derived minerals, 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, packed in a powerful tablet. But that's not it. 160,000 auric points, a knockout punch to free radicals. Call 877-878-4203 or go to GCNteam.com. That's 877-878-4203.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to danpilla.com to order your copy. That's danpilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com.